We're in Brachos, Be'ein Yaakov, Daf Ein Beis Amud Aleph in the Standard in Yaakov Editions, which is Daf Lamed Hei in the Talmud Brachos. And the Gemara is in the middle of a discussion about how one should lead one's life. Should one be balancing Torah with work? Should one try to focus on Torah and the Parnassah will come on the side? And we ended off with a comment that a person should figure out how to make his income so that he could continue learning, and sometimes it pays to take off a month in Nisan and a month in Tishrei so that you could learn the rest of the year. And now the Gemara continues with another quote along the same lines, along the same topic. Amar Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Rabba Bar Bar Chana quotes Rabbi Yochanan, Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Ilai. This is a quote from the great Tana, Rabbi Yehuda Berebi Ilai. Now Rabbi Yehuda Berebi Ilai was the contemporary of Rabbi Shimon. You guys have the place?
No, where are we?
Page Ayin Beis. Should say on the top left of the page, Ayin Beis. Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi was the one that, when there was the conversation between Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai and Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi, how do we view the Romans? So Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi said, look at how great they are. Look at how they prepare the paved roads and the bridges. And then the Romans appointed him as Rosh HaMdabirim B'chol Makom. He should be the first to speak anytime the rabbis gather. Now he should not be confused with Rabbi Yehuda ben Gerim, who was the one who ultimately quoted the conversation. So there was Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi, Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, and Rabbi Yossi Bar Tachlafto, contemporaries, disciples of Rabbi Akiva. And whenever you encounter in Shas, Rabbi Yehuda, it's Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi. Rabbi Shimon, it's Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai. Rabbi Yossi, it's Rabbi Yossi Bar Tachlafta. These three Tanoim all appear throughout Shas. And here we have a quote from Rabbi Yochanan, who compiled the Jerusalem Talmud. Mishum Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi. Mishum means he heard it in his name, but he didn't hear it directly from him, because there were a few centuries between them. Now Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi, the Talmud tells us, in his generation they loved Torah. In his generation the students learned in dire poverty, to the point where the Talmud says six students would cover themselves under one blanket. Six students in the academy would sit together under one coat trying to study from the same scroll. The Talmud views their generation with great admiration, how they learned Torah and were willing to sacrifice almost everything physical just to be able to study Torah. So now that we have this picture of Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi, let's hear the quote. Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi says, Ba'u e, come and see. Ma ben dorot rishonim ledorot achonim. What's the difference between the earlier generations and the later generations? Now obviously he is the later generation, he's the one talking. Dorot arishonim she'asu toratan keva umlachtan arai, the earlier generations. They made their Torah their focus, and their work their livelihood. They did on the side. That was the passing fling, so to speak. Well, when they'd have a chance, they'd go over and do their work. But their focus, their love was Torah. Their days revolved around Torah. Their livelihood was something they caught up with on the side. So both were successful. They managed their Torah, they knew their Torah well, and their livelihoods also went well. But the later generations, whose work became the focus, and the Torah was the thing they caught whenever they had a free chance, neither one is successful by them. Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi is talking, and he says, look, the later generations, he's obviously talking about his generation and the one before it at least, he says, we're not as focused on Torah as our predecessors. And yet Chazal tell us this great compliment about his generation. What are we going to say? So this is the quote from Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi. This seems to balance out what we saw earlier. Earlier we said you have to do work with Torah because most people who tried doing Torah without work, it didn't work for them. So then we quoted Rava that said, take off 2 months a year if you have to in order to be able to learn the rest of the year. And now Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi is saying, yeah, but what's the focus? What's the permanent thing, the main thing you're doing during your day? And in today's day and age, those of you who could study it and be successful in it, there are many ways of making money on the side like that. There are quite a few people who sit in Beis Medrash and they take off an hour. I know a guy who used to run the websites for different banks out of the Beis Medrash. He'd have, then it was a BlackBerry. They didn't have the iPhone or whatever it is. Then it was a BlackBerry. This goes back about 5-10 years ago. He used to sit in Beis Medrash learning, and he'd get his emails if there was a problem with the website, and he ran the websites for different banks out of the Beis Medrash, sitting and learning. And there were other people who were making their living off of trading on the internet, and they take a half hour, an hour in the morning, a half an hour in the afternoon, a half hour, an hour at night, and the rest of the day they're learning. Today there are different ways of making a living where you don't have to be in the shop all day. It's not the world that used to be. Today, it's doable. I'm not saying everyone's successful at it, but if we're looking for a way of making a living where we'll be able to learn, there are ways out there. Don't be quick to buy into the get-rich-quick schemes. Do something responsible. But at the end of the day, there are responsible ways of making a living.
Rabbi Bar Bar Chana quoted Rabbi Yochanan again in the name of Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi. Bo'u eim ha-ben dorot ha-chonim ne-dorot ha-rishonim. Come see, let's discern what's the difference between the later generations and the earlier generations. Dorot ha-rishonim yu-machnisin purot en derech trak simon kedei lechayvan b'maaser. The earlier generations would work to ensure that when they'd bring their fruits into the house, they'd bring it through the front gates, and then those fruits would be biblically obligated to take off the tithe. Dorot achonim, but the later generations, machnisin poten derech gagot derech hatzerot derech karpefot kedel fotran min ha-maaser. And then the later generations, they bring it in roundabout ways. The Torah says, when a person declares that he took off his tithe, he says, I took the tithe from the fruit of the house. And we have on tradition that the fruit must enter the house in the standard way in order to be biblically obligated to remove the tumot and maaser. But if you bring it in through a back alleyway, so then that fruit technically is not biblically obligated to take off the tithe. So the later generations were looking for all kinds of legal loopholes to get out of giving their tithe. So Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Eloi says, look at the difference. The earlier generations, they ensured they would be biblically obligated. They gave their trumas and maestros, and their fruits were blessed. The later generations, they're doing all these legal tricks to get out of it, and you see that they're not successful. The Amar Rabbi Yanai. For Rabbi Yanai taught, who's Rabbi Yanai? The Rabbi of Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yanai taught, "Ena tevel mitchayev v'maaser ad sheireh pnei habayit." The fruit, tevel is fruit that was not taken, that you did not take off the gifts, the truma and the maaser, that's not biblically obligated to take off the gifts to the kohen and the levi until it sees the face of the house, the regular entrance. Shneimals, the verse says, "Bi'alti hakodesh min habayit." I removed the holy fruit from my house, and we have on tradition that that means that it entered the house in the regular way, as we explained earlier. Rabbi Yochanan amar afilu chatzer kovat shnema v'achlu b'sherech v'saver. Rabbi Yochanan disagreed with his Rebbe Rabbi Yanai. He said, even if you brought it into the yard, we have a derivation from the pasuk that also obligates it. But at the end of the day, that's the idea. Were they trying to get out of it, or were they trying to give what they were supposed to give? Now we've turned the page. It says 144 on the top right of the page. Haya Rabbi Meir Omer. Rabbi Meir used to say. So that's a funny way of quoting Rabbi Meir. So there are different opinions as to why the Talmud quotes Rabbi Meir this way. We have a story in Horios. We discussed this story that there was once an argument between the rabbis, and Rabbi Meir tried to demote the chief rabbi, the Nasi, together with Rabbi Nassan. And then they were taxed that when their quotes would be quoted in the Mishnah, it would be quoted in an unusual way that Rabbi Meir used to say. It doesn't say it overtly, Rabbi Meir says. So Rabbi Meir used to say, "Nimash mash ne'emar al temor latot piyo en yodeh she'etzmach ali." The Torah says that when you have the first fruits, the first 3 years of a fruit-bearing tree, you have to leave off those fruits. So if the Torah says that, don't I know we're talking about a fruit-bearing tree? Why does the Torah have to begin by telling me when you have a fruit-bearing tree? So why does the Torah have to tell me when you have a fruit-bearing tree? You're about to tell me, of this tree, don't eat the fruits the first 3 years. So you don't have to tell me it's a fruit-bearing tree. I'll figure that out. To tell me, the Torah describes it as a tree of fruit. That's the wording in Hebrew. Etz machal, a tree of fruit. To indicate to me that there are trees that they themselves are the fruit. The eze, ze pilpilin. That's what they called in Chazal's time pilpilin. I don't know what pilpilin are. I don't think that's the pilpilin we have today. But in Chazal's time, in the time of the Talmud, they called some kind of fruit pilpilin. And those fruits, the tree itself had the same taste as the bark had the same taste as the fruit, and they were both used equally. Here you've been taught that pilpilin are considered a tree and you may not eat the first 3 years. That's the halacha called orla. And to teach you that Israel lacks nothing. That Israel has even trees that have the taste of the fruit. That the tree itself is like a fruit. Shenemar, as the verse describes Israel, as Eretz asher lo v'miskenut tochal ba lechem lo techsar kol ba. God describes Israel as a land where you'll lack nothing. So you should know the land of Israel has anything you could dream of. It's interesting, someone mentioned here in class a few weeks ago that all over the world they were buying lychees. And they thought you can't grow lychees out of China. And then in Israel they decided, yes we can. And I understood Israel was the first country out of China to grow lychees. That's what one of the guys here told us. So Chazal tell us that there are veins that run through the earth. And those veins give sustenance to different lands. One country is good for growing bananas. So they have veins that bring the sustenance that bananas require. Another country is good for growing pomegranates, for growing potatoes, tomatoes. Every crop has certain nutrients, if you want to call it that it needs. And Chazal said that there are veins in the earth. And they say that in the generations before the flood, the farmers were such experts, they could lift the soil, taste it, and tell you what you could grow here. And they could trace the lines of where nutrients ran on the earth. And then after the flood, we lost this wisdom. But Chazal say all the veins come from Israel. So if you only know how to tap in the land of Israel, you could grow every single crop. You just have to know where to do it. That's what Chazal said. So this pasuk that says the land is lacking nothing, well, we have to know how to use the land properly in order to make it lacking nothing, in order to be able to grow everything here. That's not saying you could take any crop and plant it anywhere and it'll work. There is a chachmah, there's a wisdom, which I'm not sure we have today. But in Chazal's time, I guess they were closer to it.
מעשה ברבן ימיאל והזקנים שהיו מסובין בעליה ביריחו והביאו לפניהם כותבות.
Rabbi Gamliel and the elders were having a meal in a top floor in Jericho, and they brought before them dried dates, and ואכלו, and they ate them. ונתן רבן ימיאל רשות לרבי עקיבא לברך. So Rabbi Gamliel gave Rabbi Akiva, the disciple, permission to make the after blessing. Now there was a machlokas, Rabbi Gamliel and the sages, when the Torah says, you will eat and you will be full and you will bless, and the Torah gives us the biblical mitzvah of Birkat HaMazon, is that relevant to all seven species or only to bread? So the sages say we only make the seven blessings, the Birkat HaMazon on bread. Rabbi Gamliel said, on any one of the seven species, you have to make Birkat HaMazon. Because the commandment to make the after blessing appears in the Torah after the description of the seven species. So it's true that it says, and you eat bread. And then it says, and you will make a blessing. But he says it still goes back on all seven species. So Rabbi Gamliel had in mind that he's honoring Rabbi Akiva to bless. He's the chief rabbi present. Rabbi Akiva will bless the way Rabbi Gamliel holds. He'll make a full four blessings on behalf of everyone. What does Rabbi Akiva do? Chafatz ubrecha b'kiva bracha achad me'en shalosh. Rabbi Akiva quickly made a blessing like we make, me'en shalosh, an alamechia,
al eitz v'apriyetz. Amar li Rav Gamliel, so Rav Gamliel looks at his disciple, you know, with all due respect, you're still a student here. And he says to him, Akiva, ad matai ta machnis roshcha ben ha-machloket? Akiva, what are you sticking your head into my argument with the rabbis? You're a student here. Amar lo, so Rav Gamliel answered him, Rabbeinu, our teacher, af al pi shata omer kach, v'chavecha omrim ken, even though you're saying this way, and your friends say the other way, Limatanu Rabbeinu Yachid v'Rabim Halacha k'Rabim. You taught us when there's an argument between an individual and the majority opinion, the halacha is like the majority opinion. The rabbis disagree with you. I had to go like them. So what did Rabbi Gamliel want from him? Rabbi Gamliel didn't know that. So the Gra in Shulchan Aruch has a fascinating pshat here. The Gemara will later on tell us that there's only one food in the world that can be as satiating as bread, and that is dates. The Talmud says dates can be as satiating as bread. So if you ate a lot of dates, you can make Birkat HaMazon, the Talmud says, and you're not in error. So what Rabbi Gamliel was saying to Rabbi Akiva was, I know the majority is not like me, but here you didn't have to enter the Machlokas. Because the rabbis agree with me that had you made Birkat HaMazon, you would have fulfilled your obligation here too. Because here we ate dates. And dates is technically, everyone agrees, if you made Birkat HaMazon, it's okay also. So what do you have to enter the Machlokas for? And I guess Rabbi Kiva held still. They want me to make a bracha, so I'm going to make the ideal bracha, not the Bidyevet bracha. Which brings us to another question, but we're out of time. Okay, I'll tell you a quick story. There was once a very, very big rabbi here in Jerusalem. I don't think I'm allowed to say his name, because of the continuation of the story. And he was honored to officiate a wedding of two of the most respected families in Jerusalem. And all the top rabbis of Jerusalem were present. So he was given the cup of wine to make the bracha for the Kiddushin. And he's holding the cup of wine. And everyone agrees, he was a big genius of Torah. But he was under pressure, everyone was looking at him. So he's standing up there and he makes the blessing. And he's holding a cup of wine and he makes the blessing. Baruch. So the whole crowd is, what? So he catches himself and he starts again and he says, Baruch ato Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam Reperi Hagofen. Okay. After the whole ceremony, one of his friends or teachers, I don't know who, one of the rabbis went over to him and said, look, I understand you got excited, you made a blessing by mistake. I understand that. But what I don't understand is, you know, shehakol b'di'evet encompasses everything. Your shehakol at the end of the day encompassed the borei pri hagafen. Why did you make the blessing from scratch, a borei pri hagafen? So he said an interesting answer. He said, when the rabbi makes the blessing on the wine, he's not making a blessing for himself to drink from the wine. Technically, the chassan should make the blessing. The reason we have the custom that the rabbi makes the blessing is not to embarrass those chatanim that don't know how to make blessings. So the rabbi makes the blessing for everyone. So then I am technically his messenger for making the blessing. This everyone agrees on. He said, I was his messenger to make a blessing mechatchila, not bidyevet. I can't make a blessing on his behalf that is the blessing bidyevet. I could only make a lechatchila blessing. And now with our story, we see a mekar for his opinion. Rabbi Akiva went and purposely made a blessing against his Rebbe to make the blessing in the Lechatchila fashion, not the Bidyevet fashion. He could have made his Rebbe happy, but he was making a blessing on behalf of everyone. So then he has to make the blessing that's Lechatchila for the majority opinion.